Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on incorrigible delinquency when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if your plumber said that? You know, if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client. What if your carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? You know, our common sense ought to tell us that a plumber or carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps has to be incompetent. You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor, a law professor, at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he said. He said, it's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And he said it's worse than that. Most of the students in this law school graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. And he went on to say that whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, that it is a cruel hoax. And that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's the place to start. It's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it, before you forget. Incorrigible delinquency. Here in America, we have a god-awful problem with incorrigible delinquents. Gangs maraud around in our big cities and murder people at will. They just drive down the streets and shoot people off the street corners. No rhyme or reason to it, no purpose behind it. Now, most countries in the world don't have this problem, and so we ought to ask ourselves, well, why is that such a problem here in the United States? What's different here in the United States than, say, Saudi Arabia, where that doesn't happen? What's different about the United States than Japan, where that doesn't happen, where it's not allowed to occur? What do the Japanese and the Saudi Arabians and other people around the world do to control their children, to control juvenile delinquency? And has it always been that way? You know, when I was a kid, I used to go out my paper route, you know, in the morning, and I'd take a .22 with me. That's a firearm for all of you flatlanders out there. And I'd just sling it across the handlebars of my bicycle, and I'd drive around, and ride around, deliver my papers, and shoot pigeons off the power lines in the city of Eureka, California. This is 1950, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, long enough. And, you know, every once in a while, a police car would come by, and he could see I had a gun, 12-year-old kid, 13, 14, 15-year-old kid riding around in the streets of Eureka, California with a gun. Hell, I wasn't the only one. And David and some of the other paper boys, they were shooting pigeons, typically in April. I think that's when the pigeons came through, in April, May, something like that. Shooting squab off the power lines, right off the city streets. Nobody ever said a word. Can you imagine where a kid would be today if he took a gun out on the streets, you know, say Los Angeles or Philadelphia or Eureka, California, for that matter, and start shooting pigeons off the power lines on his paper route? Now, there was a big difference. I didn't cause anybody any harm and didn't kill anybody. Wasn't shooting people off the street corners. And I'd been instructed in firearms. My daddy taught me how to use one, gave me one. And then I used it, and so did David and Ed and Mike and Richard and the rest of the kids. And it was pretty common practice. There was something different about the 1950s than the 21st century, wouldn't you say? And we didn't have any school shootings, and we didn't have juvenile delinquency. I shouldn't say we didn't have any. I guess there's a little bit running around here and there, but it was rare. It was rare. I didn't know of any. You know, I'm an ordinary, run-of-the-mill public school kid, and I didn't know of any juvenile delinquency going on there. Once in a while, a kid would get in trouble, and more than likely, his dad would just wail the daylights out of him, and then it'd be the end of it. See? Now, there were some broken homes. Divorce wasn't quite as common back in the 40s and 50s as it is today. Today, it runs around two-thirds. That is, two marriages out of every three will end in divorce. It wasn't that bad in those days, and so we had more fathers in the home, and we had more mothers in the home. You know, mothers today are out in the workplace, busily chasing their careers, and their kids become latchkey kids, and, you know, children get into trouble. Things like that happen. So I suppose you could sit here and you could come up with about 55 different reasons why we have more juvenile delinquency today than we had, say, in the old days, or something's different in Turkey or Japan or Chile or Mexico or something. But we certainly have a juvenile delinquency problem here in the United States. The other day, I was watching the 6 o'clock news, our local news here, and they reported that two 10-year-old girls had vandalized their school. Caused about $100,000 worth of damage. Two girls are fifth graders, 10 years old, and they caught them on a security camera, and of course they just identified them right away. Well, that's Margie and Mary, and so they just went out and picked them up. And now, what should be done with two 10-year-old girls that cause $100,000 worth of damage, and who should pay that $100,000 worth of damage? Is it the parents? And why didn't these parents teach these two girls not to vandalize their school? Is that normal behavior? I went to public school. I don't ever remember vandalizing. I don't remember our school ever being vandalized. I remember one time when I was in the first grade, some kid wrote the F word on a firehouse, one of those little firehouses where it held a little cart that held a hose. And, that was a scandal. That was a scene. That was something to behold. But I never even saw graffiti growing up. I think the first time I saw graffiti, I was in high school, and it was something that was happening in the big cities, like New York. Graffiti, you know, got started in New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia. Us kids out in the countryside, you know, us mountain kids, we didn't do that, and we didn't know about it. It's kind of like homosexuality. We didn't know it. We heard about it. But we never knew anybody. Never saw it. You know, it wasn't up in our face like it is today. And so, juvenile delinquency didn't occur nearly as often in the old days. So we must have been doing something different, you know, 50, 75 years ago than we're doing today. And so, I got to looking around and searching around here, and I asked the question, well, what's going to happen to these two 10-year-old girls? Well, they were arrested. And they were put into juvenile hall. They've been removed from their home and put into a juvenile facility. That's where you put juvenile delinquents. And they'll have a trial. You know, they'll have a disposition. There's a juvenile officer, and they'll be put on probation and parole and one thing or another. But the parents will never pay one dime of that $100,000 damage. Now, if those same parents had a dog and the dog went out and bit somebody, the parents would have to pay the damage. They would be sued. The school isn't going to sue these parents. And furthermore, if these two girls came over to your house and burned it down, you couldn't sue the parents. Why is that? There's something about U.S. law here, about Anglo-Saxon administration, at least here in North America. I suspect you Canadians have the same problem. But there's something different here than, say, back in ancient times or in other cultures and other societies. Now, when you own a dog or you own a car and you can't control it for whatever reason, it goes out and causes a damage, it's called a tort claim. And what we do is we come back and we sue you because you didn't keep your car under control. That's what happens when you run into the back of somebody else, you know. Well, automatically, the guy that ran into the back of somebody is at fault because he didn't keep his car under control. Well, you shouldn't have been following so close. Well, I was following six car lengths back. Should have been seven or eight then, shouldn't you? See how simple that is? All you do is pass a rule, you know, and you got a rule over here. If you run into the back of somebody, it's your fault. So, you know, let your conscience be your guide. You know, if you think six car lengths is enough, do it. But if it causes an accident or you have an accident, well, you got to pay for it. Now, we don't want to pay for these accidents, so we buy insurance. So that's why you want auto insurance. It's because you're irresponsible to begin with. That's why you bought the insurance, and you don't want to be irresponsible because you don't want to pay the damages that you cause. And we call that limited liability. It's the opposite of strict liability. So when we look in the Bible, we find that strict liability is the rule. Limited liability is prohibited. So if you're buying insurance, that's it's legal. You know, I mean, here in the United States, with our legal system, that's legal. You can buy insurance. You don't have to be responsible for your actions. You can pass the responsibility off to somebody else. But if you were following Mosaic law, God would require you to pay. Under the biblical law, if these two girls go out and cause $100,000 worth of damage, they have to pay the damage. That is, the parents would have to pay the whole $100,000. And if they couldn't, then the person who's damaged would take them as into bond servitude and bore a hole through their right ear, put a ring in it to keep it open, and then they would serve that time off for 7 years. Or if they couldn't pay it off in 7 years, they could be held up to 49 years into bond servitude to pay that debt off. Now, when you mention that to somebody, they gasp in horror. Oh, my God. That's not kind and gentle. I don't know if it's kind or gentle or not. I'm a reporter. I just report facts. I'm not here to criticize it or to extol it. I'm just here to report it. But I wanted to ask the question, if you had to pay the damage, if these parents had to pay that $100,000 damage to that school over there, do you think maybe they might spend more time teaching their children not to do that? Do you think that maybe if those parents had a hole bored in their ear and they were sold to the school district as janitors for the next 49 years, that the rest of the parents of the students in that school would get the message and say, oh my God, you mean that's the law of the United States? Do you think you'd have very much juvenile delinquency? See, now let's take these gangs that are running around on our streets over here. They're just, the public officials just are at a loss. They're speechless. Kind of like I am. They're at a loss. They're speechless. They just don't know what to do about all these gangs running around. You know, you got the Crips and the Bloods. And they're recruiting young people, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, you know, out of the public schools. Of course, you ought to ask yourself, why are you sending your kid to public school so that he can learn to be a drug addict and be recruited into a gang? But then I guess that's a given, isn't it? That's the way we do things here in this country. But anyway, they're recruiting these kids in. Now, these kids, they practice all kinds of deviant sexual activity, rape. You know, they rob, they beat up on people. They go through initiations where they get beat up. To be initiated into the Crips and Bloods, you have to go through a beating. Girls have to be raped. And boys have to go out and do something really bad. You know, they'll come up with something, you know, like hitting an old lady over the head and stealing her purse or killing somebody or something like that. And then they get into drugs, you know. Got to have drugs. That you couldn't be a gang member without some marijuana and cocaine, one thing or another. In order to get money, we have to sell drugs. And we have to have extortion rackets and things like that. All kinds of criminal behavior. And remember, these are children now. They're 9. Some of them as young as 9 years old being recruited into these gangs. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And they're young teenagers, you know, up to 18 years old, 20 years old. They're not old enough to vote. Most of them aren't even old enough to get a driver's license. I don't know how they get from where they are to where they need to go to hit this old lady over the head and kill her or steal her purse. I guess somebody has to drive them around to find somebody. And here in America, we haven't got a clue as to what to do about it. Now, they don't have that problem in Japan, so whatever it is you people in Japan are doing, you got that under control. Whatever you people in Saudi Arabia are doing, or Iran, or you know other places, you know, evidently you people know how to control your children. Here's another kicker. There was a case came up here in Missouri. It was a few years back now, but there was a Muslim man and his wife. He has 4 or 5 kids. I don't know where he came from, Iran, Iraq, or someplace. You know, he's a Muslim guy. He comes here to the United States, goes to work, model father, model husband, model worker. He's working, doing his job. Now, his girl goes to public school. And he wants to be an American. You know, most people come to this country, you know, immigrants, you know, they want to assimilate into the society. Now, he's a Muslim. He doesn't want to become a Christian now. I'm not getting into religion here, but he's doing his thing. And he's been raised in his Muslim religion and so on, customs, one thing and another. Come think, he might have been from Lebanon. Come think of it, it's kind of jogging my memory. I think he was from Lebanon, Lebanese. Anyway, his daughter, going to public school, you know, acts like a normal teenage girl. She wants to go to work for McDonald's. And I don't know if she did get a job at McDonald's or she just wanted to get a job at McDonald's. But anyway, the father, in this case, Muslim guy, he said, no, can't do that. And this girl, she wanted to go out at night. She wanted a boyfriend. You know, they're called teenage girls. She wanted to have a boyfriend. And I suppose she wanted to do a little free sex. I suppose she had a little sex education in public school. I don't know if you Muslim people here understand the perversion that goes on in the public school system. I suspect that they don't have that kind of perversion in Lebanon or in Saudi Arabia or Iran and places like that. Because of their religious belief and upbringing, I suppose that they don't have that kind of perversion that we take for granted and parade around throughout the world and all over America. But they come here to the United States, and I guess that he just kind of assumed, you know, that, well, you know, school is school. School is school is school. So anyway, his daughter turns into a whore. Well, that's normal. About 90% of young American girls are whores. They're taught whoredom in the public school system. It's called sex education over here, but, you know, it's a training ground for prostitution is what it boils down to. And free sex and sodomy and the alternative lifestyle, we call it here in this country. And so he was really offended at that. And his daughter was out of control, and he didn't know what else to do about it. And so these Muslims, you know, this is a little strange here for American ears, but these Muslims have a custom in their country where they come from. When they have a daughter or a son that's out of control and they don't know what to do with them, they kill them. I didn't stutter. They kill them. Dead. That's what he did to his daughter. He killed her. I forgot how he did it. He cut her throat or something like that. And he didn't do it alone. No. He had a couple of sons that were, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old. They held the girl down while the old man killed her. They were holding the girl, and he cut her throat or stabbed her to death or whatever. Well, I don't forget now exactly how that went. Well, anyway, it was a big scene. It was over in St. Louis, and they had a big scene over there, and they caught this guy, and you know, didn't have to work very hard to catch him, I guess. And so they prosecuted him and put him in prison. And I imagine this guy was shocked. Here he ends up in prison for doing what he would do at home to keep order in his family. See, he thought he owned that girl. I mean, I guess he must have thought that he owned her. Now, I suppose he checked her into public school. When he came to the United States, he had to sign a lot of papers. And I imagine he applied for citizenship, and I'm sure he had a green card. And this makes him liable to the laws of the United States. And so here he left Lebanon, and where we, in many of these countries, they don't follow these practices anymore. But I want to point out to you that that they used to, you know, and some of them still do. I mean, you know, you take your daughter out and kill her in some of these Muslim countries, they don't care. She needed it. She was incorrigible. She wouldn't mind. And so here in America, you know, the thought that you would take a 9, 10, 12, 14, 15, 16-year-old kid out and kill him, execute him. You know, I don't care how you do it, but, you know, execute him for, you know, knocking an old lady over the head and stealing her purse or killing somebody or shooting people off the street corners and things like that. The thought of capital punishment for juvenile delinquencies is just abhorrent to American ears. They just couldn't handle that. And I suppose you Englishmen and Europeans, just Anglo-Saxons, I don't know, maybe the Japanese have a different view of it, I don't know. Maybe the Chinese have a different view, I'm not quite sure. Maybe if we went back to doing what we were doing in 1900, whatever that was. I mean, Americans can't do what we were doing in 1900 because we don't know what we were doing in 1900. So we don't know if that's good or bad or right or wrong or we should or shouldn't do it. We just know where we're at today, and today we've got juvenile delinquents, and Americans today barricade and bar their doors, lock themselves in, are afraid to go out at night. Hell, in many places, in this country, I'm a white man, I wouldn't drive through Philadelphia at high noon. That's what I think of Philadelphia. I did one time. I went down to look at the Liberty Bell. I drove through Philadelphia on a Sunday at high noon. Once. I'd never do it again. Hell, I drove through New York one time. Once. I wouldn't do that again. Now, you know, most of you people, you live in New York, and so you don't know anything different, and so it's normal for you. You live in Philadelphia, so you don't see anything else, nor, you know, so it's normal to you. But for those of us out here that can compare where we live in the Midwest or out in the West, out in the countryside, and then we compare that with the way you people live like animals in the city, you know, that's a zoo. You can't compare it. You don't have anything to compare it with. Anybody from out here in the countryside going into one of these big cities over here. I drove through Chicago one time at 2 o'clock in the morning. I stopped for gas off the freeway. I'm driving through the freeway, through the big city, 2 o'clock in the morning. I look at my gas gauge. It's a little low, and I said, hey, I think I'll just pull off the freeway here and fuel up. So I pulled off the freeway, and I pulled into this gas station. And I went out to fill up. Oh, no, wait a minute. You don't fill up. You go over to a window. Say, do you go inside? No. And there's security cameras everywhere. You got bulletproof glass. The attendant is standing behind bulletproof glass. You got to pay before you pump your gas. And you got to put your money into a little drawer, which then goes through the wall and he pulls it out on the other side. The doors are barred. I mean, with iron bars. This guy is a prisoner inside the gas station. He doesn't come out. He doesn't have any contact with customers. He talks through a microphone. And it's an all-black neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning. See? And then I talked to some people about that. You know, later I said, that was really bizarre. I mean, it was like a fort. It was a Shell station, Shell gas station. Downtown, you know, around somewhere downtown Chicago. I mentioned that to people, you know, later. And they gasped in horror and said, you stopped in Chicago to buy gas at 2 o'clock in the morning? I said, yeah. What's wrong with that? See, that's what happens when you're dumb, you know. Now, you people that live in Chicago, I mean, there was three or four other guys in the gas station. They were pumping gas, too. They're just dumb as I was, I guess. Now, that's the way life is here in the United States of America. Now, for you people that are living in Japan and South Korea and Taiwan and China, you're probably saying, huh? You got to be kidding. Oh, no, no. No, we lock ourselves in here because our children are our oppressors and women rule over us. Children. Children are our oppressors. And women rule over us. That's the way life is here. There was a prophet in the Bible. His name was Isaiah, and he made that observation. He got that from God, the Creator. Our Creator said, the day will come when children will be your oppressors and women will rule over you. The stranger that's within your gate is going to get high above you and bring you down very low. And that's where we are here in the United States and Canada and Australia, New Zealand and England. And it's a revolting development, but that's the way it is. Now, I wanted to bring this up and bring this to your attention over here, because why is it that way? Has it always been that way? And the answer is no. No, it hasn't always been that way. It wasn't that way when I was a kid 50 years ago. It's developed over the last 50 years. Is it going to be changed? No. Is it going to get worse? Yep. It's going to get worse. If you think things are bad now, you ain't seen nothing yet. You wait until there's a civil breakdown in society, which is coming to a city near you shortly. Civil disobedience, civil disorder. You got to have martial law. Now, if you're going to keep any semblance of order over here, you're going to have troops on the street. Because, see, with everything working the way it's supposed to work, you're afraid to buy gas at 2 o'clock in the morning in a service station which is well lit. You know, policemen are out on the streets doing their thing and one thing another, and crime abounds. And it's young crime, juvenile crime. Oftentimes these kids just shoot and kill people for no purpose at all. You know, these gang kids, I think it's a part of their initiation, at least in some cases. And like in New York and in Chicago, Los Angeles, these Crips and Bloods gang members, they just kill people for their initiation rites. What's that all about? Now, if they get caught, are the parents responsible? No. If they get caught, what happens? They go through the juvenile justice system. And if they're underage and they kill somebody, they only hold them till they're 21, then they turn them loose again. You know, when the kid gets to be 21, you know, he's no longer a juvenile, so they cut him loose. I don't know. Is that a good policy? You know, I'm not here to criticize it. I'm here to report on it. And to show you that in the olden days, we didn't have that. And there's some history behind this. So is there some justification for this Muslim guy killing his child? Did you know that in ancient Israel, this is Jesus, you know, this is Jesus telling us that in ancient Israel, we ought to practice this law. Did you know what we did with juvenile delinquents back in Moses' day? Do you know what would happen to a kid that talked back to his parents or was incorrigible, who was a juvenile delinquent? They'd take him out and stone him to death. Now, I never lived in a time when you could take your children out and stone them to death. I never saw that. That has never been in my lifetime. But in Anglo-Saxon administration, it used to be that way. See, it used to be that fathers had control over their children, and they made it a point to control them. My dad did that to me. He not only controlled me, he made it a point. I remember one time he told me, he said, you know, you're out of control. He said that to me. He said, you know, you're out of control. My granddad, he noticed that one time. He said, I'm going to bring you back down to earth. You're floating out here in space someplace. I'm going to bring you back down to earth. He did. Now, I didn't go out and kill people and take drugs and do all these criminal acts that the young people are doing today. I never went out and vandalized my school or caused damage to people. Now, I went out and I broke up some stuff, and I did some vandalism, and I did some juvenile delinquent stuff, just like all kids do. And then all kids get caught, and then when they get caught, I was punished by my parents. I took my BB gun out one time, and I shot a guy's windshield out of his Jeep. I don't know what the cost of it was. They had put the windshield back in, both panes. These have two panes of glass, you know, on your Jeep windshield. And shot them both out. I probably put 50 pop marks, you know. And my granddad paid for the Jeep repairs and whipped my hiney. And it taught me not to do that again. I did it one time in my life, and I never did it again. I learned my lesson. But I imagine most kids do that. You know, they'll go out there and cause some kind of trouble over there. But it wasn't big and bad. It wasn't public in some way. So I just wanted to point that out, that we used to have parents that were responsible for their children's behavior. But today, if these parents punished those two girls, I'm not quite sure what punishment would be appropriate there, but if they did, do you know that those children might be taken away from those parents because social lady didn't like the punishment that was meted out by the babysitters? We'll talk about that when we come back. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet daily and radio. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the law school, the law hour, or editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Here in the Bible, the Old Testament, you Christians, shut your ears. You're not supposed to hear this. And if you're a Catholic, you're not supposed to listen to the Bible at all. Got that right out of the Catholic Church. Fairly recent, too. It was 1847. It's a papal bull. In 1847, one of your popes, I forgot his name now, told you that you're not supposed to read the Bible. Your priest will interpret it and tell you everything you need to know about it. So you Catholics, shut your earballs. You're not supposed to hear this. This is for Protestant ears only. And not very many of those either, because the Old Testament has been abolished and done away with by Jesus, who nailed it to the cross and took it out of the way. All right. Now, for the other 10 or 15 of you out there that aren't Catholics, aren't Protestants, and can still think for yourselves, this is for you. And it's in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 18. And this is an instruction that Moses received from the Creator of the universe. This is God Almighty Himself. Now, listen to this. This is kind of wild. It says, if a man has a stubborn and a rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that, when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them. So even after they have whipped him, and he won't hearken, won't pay attention, won't listen, then shall his father and mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of the city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not obey our voice. And he is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones that he die, so shall you put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Did you hear that? Does this sound real kind and gentle to you? Now, in case you thought that Jesus was such a nice guy, which I suppose he was, you know, in his way, but Jesus is not the nice guy that you think he is. In Matthew 4:4, Jesus said this. He said, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." Did you hear that? That's Jesus. Now, remember, I've mentioned this before. When Jesus made that statement orally to his disciples and anybody else that was standing there listening to him, not one word of the New Testament had been written yet. And he said, "Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word." Every word. Well, I just read you some words from those 39 books in the Old Testament that you Catholics and Protestants have been told, lay off, don't pay attention to that. Now, evidently Jesus hadn't gotten the word yet that the Old Testament had been abolished and done away with, or that you should not read it, hear it, and fear it. See, I don't know what you Catholics are learning from your priests. Did they tell you that if you've got an incorrigible son, you ought to take him out to the elders of the city and stone him? I don't know. I'm not a Catholic. I haven't been there. I haven't been listening to the priest lately. I just wanted to report to you that this report that came from Moses was reinforced by Jesus. Now, Jesus had another thing to say. There was some other people in his society, in his time, called Pharisees. And over in Matthew chapter 15, Jesus had some words about these Pharisees and about this very law about juvenile delinquency. Listen to this. "Then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, 'Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders, for they wash not their hands when they eat bread?'" You could do the same thing today, you know. Why don't you take your hat off when you hear the Star Spangled Banner being played? Hey, why don't you do bread and wine every Sunday? Why don't you do communion? Hey, why aren't you in church? It's Sunday. See, we have customs here. And so these people had customs, and evidently, you know, you were supposed to wash your hands, you know, turn around three times and shake bat's knuckles under the full moon or something. You know, all these religious people, they have these customs. Jesus answered and said to them, "Well, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition?" So he said, "Well, listen, you're bitching at me because I'm not practicing your customs and traditions. How come you guys are violating the Ten Commandments?" That's what he asked them. "By your customs and traditions." We could do the same thing today. "Hey, how come you Catholics don't practice the Ten Commandments? How come you don't practice the Sabbath? How come you don't practice the Holy Days? Huh? Huh?" That's what we'd ask today. And so, in verse 4, he said, "For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and mother, and he that curses father and mother, let him die the death.'" Jesus seemed to understand this law. If you got a juvenile delinquent out here, you know, you kill him. Now, the Hebrew practice was a little different than the Muslim practice. Evidently, the Muslim father, the patriarch of the family, kills the wayward child. Just personally. Just, no, nothing personal. Snot-nosed, pimply-faced punk won't pay attention, listen to what I'm telling you over here. It'll kill you. In Hebrew society, you took him out. It was a public execution. Public. And you didn't stab him to death. You stoned him with stones. Thought I'd point that out to you. And there's a statute here in the Bible. In fact, there's two of them. In Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12:32. I'll flip over here quickly and read it to you. Deuteronomy 4, verse 2. It says, "You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Eternal your God which I command you." So we're instructed here, don't you add anything to this by stabbing your kid to death, or take anything away from it by turning your kid over to social lady. You just sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what I tell you. So we don't have any need for Congress or state legislators because we were told not to add or subtract from this law. We don't do that. I'm not here, you know, to tell you that this is what we need to do. We don't do it, haven't done it. We're not doing it now, and we ain't going to do it in the future. Okay? Now, that's the last word on that. But I wanted to point out that Jesus over here castigated these religious people, these Pharisees. You know, the Catholics and the Protestants. You know, the Mormon bishops and Catholic priests. And then the pastors of his day. He chewed him a new one and he read him the riot act. And he said, "Hey, you hypocritical jerk. You're complaining about me because I'm sitting down here eating. I didn't wash my hands. And you guys over here have this juvenile delinquents running around in your society, hitting old ladies over the head, shooting dope, and shooting people off the street corners. And you're doing what? Complaining about me? Hey, you know, here in America, we got kids running around on our streets and shooting people off the street corners, and we're over here complaining about social ladies and the economy. Hey, don't you think that there's some serious events transpiring out there that need to be addressed?" And it seemed to me that juvenile delinquency is kind of important, especially since you have to hide yourselves from your kids. Yeah, here in America, we have another problem that maybe you'd never heard about over here. It's called parental abuse. Yeah, honest to God, I ain't kidding you. You know, outside of America and Canada and Australia, you know, you tell this to some guy over in Japan, you know, yeah, we have parental abuse over here. We have children that beat up on their parents and steal from their parents. And their parents have to get restraining orders, you know, from social lady and from the police and courts to protect them against their children. Isn't that amazing? Everybody, there isn't a Muslim in the world that would sit still for that. I shouldn't say there isn't one. I suppose there's probably one or two, but it'd be pretty rare. I think it'd be a cold day in hell before some Muslim, the father over here, would let his kid talk back to him. And they don't have very much juvenile delinquency over there. I'm just going to point that out to you. Now, there's a way to solve problems. My dad solved the juvenile delinquency problem with little Georgie Gordon. He'd bounce me off the wall, shake me until my teeth rattled, slap me up alongside the head, and then if I could survive that, he'd say, "Don't do that again." So, we got these two girls, they go out here and they vandalize the school. These two vandals, they didn't just shoot the windows out of a Jeep, you know. They went into a school, spray painted it, set fire to it. Well, I didn't go out here, you know, I was out having fun. I was vandalizing, I was having a little fun, but with my BB gun. See, a kid with a BB gun or a slingshot. Remember I told you about that slingshot? I went out and shot 11 windows out of the Christian church down there across from the VFW building there on 8th Street in Eureka. Yep, that was little Georgie, all right. Well, I shot 11 windows. Well, a kid with a slingshot, you know he's got to go out and test it, doesn't he? So he's going to test it on some windows. But I didn't go burn the school down. Now, there was a time here. You see, the reason for this law, I wanted to point this out, it also is recorded here in Exodus 21:17. Sometimes God repeats himself. I don't know if it's because he's old and senile or what, but sometimes he repeats himself. I suspect that he isn't old, he isn't senile, and the reason he does that is to emphasize a point. If something is important, he'll say it more than once. If it's real, real, real important to him, he might even tell you 135 times, which is what he does with the Sabbath. So, I'm looking in the Bible here, and I can see the Sabbath is more important than smiting parents, because he only put two statutes and one example in the Scripture concerning smiting parents and put the Sabbath in there 135 times. I think he's more concerned about Sabbath keeping than he is about kids, you know, juvenile delinquents here, but here in Exodus 21, verse 17, he makes roughly the same statement. He says, "He that curses his father or mother shall surely be put to death." Whoop, 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 whoop. See, in the one case, you had to slap them. If you slap mom or dad, you'll die the death. And here's another statute that kind of brings it to the fore. Hell, you don't even have to touch mom. All you got to do is get lippy with her, and they could take you out and stone you to death. Boy, that's a wild new concept, isn't it? Let me ask you this. What do you think would happen to the Crips and Bloods if we applied these two statutes here in America to these juvenile delinquents? Well, I can figure that out. I'm not too smart, but, you know, I can figure that out. If you took every one of these kids who would not mind mom and dad, and I'm assuming that their moms and dads don't want and have not instructed them to go out and hit old ladies over the head, steal their purses to buy drugs, or shoot people off the street corners. And if we applied this statute and we killed them, one of two things would happen. Number one, we'd kill them all, and that would solve the problem because there aren't any left. Or you'd start killing them all, but before you could get through killing them all, the rest of them would stop. You know, before you caught them all, you ain't going to catch them all the first day. But on the first day, I think we'd catch 10. We'd take 10 of them out and stone them to death, maybe in MacArthur Park, Times Square. And then the next day, I'm not sure we'd catch 10. The next day, might only catch 5. And then the next day, we might not catch 5. Might only catch 1 or 2. And the next day, we might not catch any. Might only catch 1 a week. But every time you catch one, I'm taking him out and stone him. And one of two things would happen. Either number one, you'd kill them all. Or two, the rest of them would repent, reform, and then we wouldn't have that problem anymore. Now, that's the way I got that one scoped out. And God uses a term in the Bible here. He says that they might hear and fear. That all Israel might hear and fear. Boy, let me tell you, if I was standing there watching some pimply-faced punk get stoned to death, I would hear and I would fear. Fear hell would probably scare the living hell out of me. I might even wet my pants. I've got to tell you a story here. There was a guy who came to class here, and he was an Aramco worker. He worked over in Saudi Arabia for a number of years, and he was over there, and he saw two real neat events. And he said, they don't have any crime in Saudi Arabia. Well, you know, ordinary crime. I mean, you don't have people running around robbing 7-Eleven stores and robbing banks and, you know, stuff like that. You know, ordinary common crimes. Now, once in a while, some guy will steal. And he told me about this story about this guy. Now, he happened to be in a bazaar. Now, I've seen some bazaars or marketplaces down in Mexico. And they lock them up down in Mexico. They got an iron grate, you know, and it comes down, they lock them up. But he said over in Saudi Arabia, they've got these iron grates, and they pull them down. But it's common for the shopkeeper to walk out while you're in his store. I mean, he was in a jewelry store, a booth, what it is, a booth. And this guy's selling jewelry, you know. And the guy just walked out of there while this Aramco guy was standing in his store. He said, you know, in America, you'd never see a guy walk out of the store and leave a customer in there with the merch. And I said, yeah, that is amazing. Aren't they worried about theft and, you know, shoplifting? No, they don't worry about shoplifting at all. They don't have any shoplifters over there. And I said, well, I've heard that about Muslim countries, that they don't have very much theft, and they cut people's hands off. And he said, yep, that's what happened. He said, in fact, I saw that happen once. He said, they took this guy who was a thief, and they cut his hand off. And I said, well, how does that work? And he said, well, they had this big, big carnival. They were selling cotton candy, peanuts, popcorn. They didn't have rides. They didn't tell me anything about rides, you know, but they were selling stuff, you know, food, beverages, Coca-Cola, or something else, tea. I don't know if they're drinking Coke or not, but whatever it was, you know, it was kind of a... And there were hundreds of people there at the event, and they brought the guy out, you know, they brought him in a van, and they had an ambulance there. They brought an ambulance in. They had two guys there at the ambulance, you know, with a tourniquet and... And then they had a big block of wood, and they brought this big block of wood over, and they got a guy with that Arabian scimitar. Know how that funny-looking Arabian sword? They call that a scimitar. And I guess it's pretty sharp, and it's pretty big and heavy, and so they tied this guy's arm. They got straps on this block of wood. So evidently they've done this more than once. And they strapped this guy's arm down on the block of wood, big tree trunk. I think it was a tree trunk. And this guy is just terrified. He said he was sweating like a pig at a 4th of July picnic.
And the guy was babbling a little bit something over here, and so the guy takes the big scimitar up and kerblowy, and the guy screams bloody murder. I guess when you get your hand cut off, I imagine it hurts. I don't know. And he gasped. He said, "There's just blood everywhere." He said the blood was just god awful. And so the two ambulance guys, now they rush over and they release his arm, strap down. And the guy is writhing in pain, and he's screaming in agony, one thing or another. So I guess they jab him with some painkiller, and they tie a tourniquet on him, load him up in the ambulance, and haul him off to, in the meat wagon to the hospital. Okay. Now, that's a guy that was caught stealing. Say he's a thief, and they cut off his hand. In public. Big public gathering there. Now, can you imagine doing that in Times Square? Or in MacArthur Park, you know, or, you know, wherever you're at, you know. You take a guy out publicly and cut his hand off. Now, that is not prescribed in the Bible, so I'm not suggesting now that Moses and God got together here and said, cut your hand off. There is one statute in the Bible where you cut off somebody's hand. There is a crime for which you could get your hand cut off, but theft isn't that crime. And remember, Deuteronomy 4:2 and 12:32, our God tells us, don't get cutesy now and come up with a better punishment than I've already prescribed. Just do what you're told. Okay. So that's why we're not supposed to hang horse thieves, because the penalty for stealing horses is not death. I'll point that out. You ought not to burn witches at the stake, because burning people at the stake or burning a witch at the stake is not the punishment for witchcraft. So, we here in the West, you know, we haven't followed our God very well. I mean, we don't do anything He tells us. Never have, don't now, aren't going to. But I just thought I'd point that out to you, that there was a solution to this. Now, if you want to solve the juvenile delinquency problem in America, there's a solution. And the people in Japan know how to do that. And I would suggest that we go to Japan and ask those people in Japan, hey, how do you do that? They don't have thieves over in Saudi Arabia, and I don't think that there would be any tolerance there for the Crips or the Bloods. I don't think there are any chapters of the Crips or Bloods in Saudi Arabia. I don't think they'd allow it. I throw that out there for your consideration. Now, juvenile crime in America is everywhere. I mean, they got these Crips and Bloods in big towns and little towns. In fact, right here in Springfield, Missouri, population 160,000, they got these Crips and Bloods. Right here. Right in the Midwest. That's why we avoid Springfield, you know, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And they don't know what to do with them up there. They haven't figured out that public school is the problem. At least not yet. All right, now I showed you that we got incorrigible delinquency, smiting of parents. And then we ought to ask the question, well, here in America, why is it that the state gets involved? Why is the state even involved in this? Remember the two girls? I mean, it used to be, you know, the policeman would grab some kid that was wayward, take him home and say, hey, your kid's out here and doing thus and such, and then the parents would take over. When I was a kid, the worst thing can happen to you is the teacher sent a note home. Oh, God, that was a kiss of death. Well, not really, but it was kind of figuratively that, because you could rest assured that in school, if you got disciplined, you know, kept after school, or you lost your recess, or, you know, something like that, or they even paddled you. Sometimes they'd paddle you, but those guys, they couldn't. They didn't know how to do that. You could rest assured that granddad or dad at home, he would, or Aunt Bessie, when you got home, because you dishonored the family, because you misbehaved. Oh, misbehavior was really bad for a child. Yeah, and it was punishable, and real bad punishment, too. And you'd get tuned up. And it wasn't just little Georgie. It was Ronnie Mitchell and everybody else in town. Every kid in town. You misbehave. And furthermore, we didn't have this thing like we do today here in America. You know, if some guy were to slap your kid, why, you'd come unhinged, Bob. You'd have that guy arrested, and you'd be jumping up and down. Hell, when I was a kid, the worst thing could happen is that you did something and a stranger disciplined you, because you never knew what this stranger might do. So a kid knew that if he was misbehaving, out in public, anywhere, that anybody in the general public would come over and straighten you out. Anybody. So we all knew as children that it wasn't just mom and dad. It was anybody out there. It could be a total stranger. And that was really scary because, see, you knew what dad could do. You knew what mom could do. You knew what Aunt Bessie was going to do. What you didn't know, I was over in the bunkhouse one time there at the Corbell, and I don't know. I don't think I was misbehaving, but I'm not sure I was supposed to be in the bunkhouse. But I was curious, a little kid, you know, 5 years old, six. And I'm walking around, I'm looking into these guys' rooms, you know. And this guy got kind of stern with me, and he said, "What are you doing in here?" Nothing. I'm just... All right, you don't belong here. Get out. You could see smoke coming off my shoes. I couldn't get out of there fast enough. You know, just a guy said, "You don't belong here. Get out." Well, he was right. I'm not a 5-year-old kid in the bunkhouse. I didn't belong there poking around looking in people's rooms. But, you know, I was a little kid curious. You know, what? How do these men, they're all single men, you know, living in the bunkhouse, eating down at the cookhouse. Strange men over here. But I minded them. You know, I didn't give this guy any lip. And if I'd have given him any lip, and furthermore, he might have come over and just paddled my butt. And if he would have, my granddad wouldn't have done a thing about it. And he would have corrected me on top of it, and he'd have paddled me for having to be corrected by some stranger out here because I was misbehaving in public. See? So it looks like to me that we have a discipline problem here, a discipline problem early on. And the discipline problem starts with government intervention in the family. See, families in this country are afraid to discipline their children for fear that their children will be taken away from them by social aid and put in foster care. That's a big concern. You're really concerned about what is the social lady going to say if she finds a bruise on this kid. And, you know, the bigger this kid gets, you know, the more bruises he probably needs. Just, you know, as an old-timey parent, just want to point that out to you. Now, we used to have a thing here called parens patre. Parens patre. I'm going to bring that parens patre story up to you in the next program. And we'll continue our discussion here as we talk about incorrigible delinquency and the solution to it. Because there is a solution to it. In fact, you can keep your kids in order or keep them in line without having to kill them. Did you know that? I mean, if you get on top of a kid early on, chasing the kid betimes, don't spare the rod, educate, train up a child in the way he should go. You know, when that kid gets to be old, he won't depart from it. It can be done. In fact, it can be done right here in the United States of America. Believe it or not. I'll show you how to do that next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, we're out of time, so I got to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.